Welcome to the Gloucester Daily Times for Thursday, June 11th, 2026, brought to you by the Talking Information Center. Located in beautiful Marshfield, Massachusetts, this is your reader, George Krine. Today's lead story, Public continues to push for level-funded schools. It's written by Bobby Grady. Gloucester Public School students, educators, and city residents packed the Kyrus Auditorium for a public hearing on the city's proposed fiscal 2027 budget Tuesday night. The two-hour hearing focused on one subject, the schools. City councilors and Mayor Paul Lundberg listened to the testimony of more than 40 people who advocated for a level-funded school budget. The council did not vote on the budget, but will do so next Tuesday, June 16th. In early May, Lundberg presented the proposed $178 million budget for the city, which at the time included an allocation of $55.48 million to the schools, which was $1.35 million less than what Superintendent Ben Lummis had proposed. Chief Financial Officer Connor McCorkle said during Tuesday's meeting that no city department received its level service budget request, and the school department had the smallest reduction from their level service request. He added the city is looking at cutting about 8.5 positions, not including the schools. Lummis announced in a city council budget and finance subcommittee meeting on June 2nd that an additional $300,000 would be allocated to the schools, bringing the gap closer to $1 million. Additional funds are coming from an increase in trash rates under the new trash disposal contract Department of Public Works Director Mike Hale is still negotiating. Prior to the additional funds, the school district was looking at cutting 18.5 positions across the district, but mostly at the high school. With the additional funds, Lummis said in the June 2 meeting they will be able to save about 3 positions, and officials were still figuring out the best way to use the $300,000. Throughout the budget process, students, parents, community members, and educators alike have been advocating for a level service budget for the schools, or a budget that won't lead to any job cuts. And Tuesday's meeting was no different. Over 40 people urged the City Council in Lundberg to find a way to keep the schools level funded, with many citing the negative impacts on students as the main reason the schools need more money. Student voices. How can you expect our students to perform and our teachers to perform for them when they are so limited in resources with this budget? Said Olivia Hogan-Lopez, a Gloucester High School Class of 2022 graduate and recent Harvard University graduate. I ask that you look toward teachers with empathy in a way that I have not viewed in much of the news I've read, she continued. I hope that you can consider their position and recognize that as we build for tomorrow, our students need an education that is whole and that can be provided. It can only be provided by the teachers that have the resources that are necessary. Hogan-Lopez was one of several current, former, and future high school students who spoke in support of their teachers, urging city officials to fully fund the school budget. High school junior Anita Burns was one of the students who spoke up for her teachers and told the council their jobs will only become more difficult if the cuts happen. If these positions are eliminated, the impact will be felt in every classroom, every hallway, and every student's educational experience, Burns said. I understand the budget is difficult and tough decisions have to be made, but I ask the city council to remember what is at stake. Education is not just another expense. It's an investment into the future of every student. Alina Brown, who was president of Gloucester High's DECA chapter, which teaches students business, finance, and other entrepreneurial skills, and spoke on behalf of the club's teacher advisor, Brady Frost. Coming into the year, Brown said there was no full-time advisor until Frost stepped up, which has had a significant impact on the club. If you cut Mr. Frost from our DECA class, you make us show up next year with one hand tied behind our back, Brown said. Educators' perspective. Several educators also pleaded with the city council to fund a level service budget, saying the proposed cuts would be another layer of layoffs the schools have experienced in recent years, and at this point there are no good choices left. We are down to the point where every cut is impacting all the students to a certain degree, and some of the students extensively, former high school principal and current English teacher James Cook said. Vanessa Lindberg, who serves as the multilingual learner liaison at the high school, supplying students and families who do not speak English with a variety of support, she said her job could be cut as a result of the budget deficit, which would impact some of the school's most vulnerable learners. I'm a curated lifeline that would be reckless to cut. My entire focus is belonging, as from its fertile soil, success is born, Lindberg said. I assert that growing my position to include middle school support will result in greater high school success. Throughout the budget process, there has been an outpouring of support for the over 60-year-old cabinet-making program at the high school. Under the current proposal, cabinet-making instructor Tim Rose is set to be transferred to the middle school, with a new role eliminating the program. Both on Tuesday and in previous school committee meetings, several students and residents spoke about the importance of keeping the program. Students don't just build a project. They build confidence. They learn to plan, adapt, troubleshoot, fail, start over, and succeed, Rose said. These aren't extras. They're foundational life skills. Several residents suggested ways to possibly increase revenue without burdening taxpayers, such as raising fines and fees that people pay when they break the law. Resident Barnaby Prendergast also suggested the idea of a Proposition 2.5 override, which would create more revenue by increasing property taxes beyond the state limit. But Lundberg said because the city must deliver a balanced budget to the state in the next few weeks, it likely won't happen for this budget. Tobin Dominic wins Small Business Award. It's written by Joanne McKenzie. Cape Ann Marina's Tobin Dominic describes herself as a business leader, problem solver, and joy seeker. She's also the personification of saying, chip off the old block. In this case, the block being her entrepreneurial late father, Andrew Dominic. Like her father, 40 years ago, who in 1986 was named Gloucester's Small Business Person of the Year, Tobin is Greater Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce's 2026 Small Business Person of the Year. Thursday night, Dominic, who has become well known for her entrepreneurial innovations, will be honored by the chamber at a gathering at Cape Ann Marina Resort, the business her father founded on the Anasquam River, and which she and her brother Drew inherited when he died in 2010. Although both brother and sister had grown up in the marine industry and had worked at the marina, with their father's sudden passing, it was game on, said Dominic, who played both ice hockey and lacrosse at Boston College and is no stranger to games. What Tobin and her brother Drew did was dive hands-on into a multifaceted business that included a 130-room hotel, a restaurant, a bar, a marina accommodating up to 286 boats, a full-service boatyard offering storage, maintenance, boat resales, and outboard motor sales, a staff which at peak season climbs to 150, and oh, yes, a spa with a heated pool and hot tub. Any one of these might be more than enough for most people to tack on, but Tobin Dominic is, like her business, multifaceted herself. She gets up early, she said, so she can do the things she loves, which include teaching personal training and spinning class, life and health coaching, and working with Destination Gloucester, a tourism marketing organization she helped found and which she currently chairs. Faced with the prospects of helming a complex, demanding business, she said, I couldn't just throw up my hands, but I did raise my hand when I needed help. A lot of what I do is maintenance, she said, getting permits for renovations. It's a high-maintenance property. The seawall, for instance, had to be renovated, and we renovated 18 of the hotel rooms. The restaurant, which was also renovated and reimagined along with its menu, was relaunched as Mile Marker One and has become a foodie favorite and waterside hotspot that's a year-round destination for both locals and tourists. Come the pandemic, its outside deck became an ingenious little village of private heated dining igloos, the first six of which were improvised, handmade with the same shrink wrapping we use in the boatyard. More recently, the igloos have been replaced by elegant, geometric, clear glass domes that seat larger groups for year-round outside dining. A Gloucester native, Dominic prioritizes linking arms with the community. Tourism is, she said, an economic reality. In 21st century Gloucester and through its marketing destination, Gloucester, whose original founders included Lynn Parisi and the late Kate Ellis of the schooner Thomas E. Lannan, has through its marketing become a much-needed economic driver. With her brother, Drew, as co-partner, the Dominics have taken Cape Ann Marina Resort full speed ahead into the 21st century. She is, in the words of the Chamber's announcement, driven by connection with people and the belief that small businesses are the backbone of community. All are welcome to join her from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Mile Marker One restaurant, along with Mayor Paul Lundberg, Senator Bruce Tarr, other city officials, and members of the Greater Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce. There will be a cash bar and good things to munch on. The event is free. Cape Ann Marina Resort is located at 75 Essex Avenue in Gloucester. A St. Anthony tradition, celebrating 50 years of a Gloucester prayer gathering. It's written by Gail McCarthy. For half a century, the home of John and Angela Sanfilippo has been an oasis for prayers to St. Anthony during an annual 13-day prayer devotion. In honor of the 50th year, the altar is adorned with gold among dozens of saints and figurines, many which represent the couple's travels to churches and shrines throughout Europe. Each night this week at 7:30 p.m., people gather at their house for prayers and songs of prayer. Like dozens of homes across Gloucester, prayer gatherings to St. Anthony and St. Peter, both in June, and St. Joseph in March, were plentiful among the many hundreds of Sicilian immigrants who made Gloucester their home. But even the fast-paced world of the 21st century did not impact the Sanfilippo devotion to St. Anthony, who may be best known as a patron saint of lost things. But he also has become the patron saint of so much more, including animals, the elderly, oppressed people, poor people, and shipwrecks, among others. Anthony of Padua, a Franciscan preacher and teacher, is beloved around the world. Devotions are given for courage to face life's challenges, the call to love and forgive, to be concerned for the needs of others, to deal with crisis great and small, according to the shrine of St. Anthony. Sanfilippo is following a tradition that dates back to both her grandmothers in Sicily. She believes its origin in the family may stem from World War II, when her father, then 20 years old, became a prisoner of war of Nazi Germany after the signing of the Armistice of Cassibile in 1943, which marked the surrender of the Italian government to the Allied forces. The treaty was signed in a Sicilian town. One result was that many Italian soldiers became prisoners of war under the Germans. Her father survived as a prisoner of war for nearly 2 years. Until the war's end, he would later marry. My grandmother promised to carry on the devotion to St. Anthony if her son came home safe, related Sanfilippo, who is a longtime president of the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives Association. The devotion to St. Anthony also was popular in the town of her youth in Sicily and was tied to the end of the tuna fishing season, giving thanks for their bounty from the sea. Sanfilippo came to the United States in 1963 and moved to Gloucester with her family in 1965. As a teenager, she attended Gloucester High School and graduated with honors in 1969. She was a member of the National Honor Society and served as president of the Gloucester High School Business Club. She comes from generations of fishermen, and the family had immigrated from the fishing port of Porticello in Sicily. She married a Sicilian fisherman, John Sanfilippo. St. Anthony Tredicina, which means 13 days of prayer in Italian, represents a gathering of hope for the future and gratitude for Gloucester becoming her home. I think Gloucester embraced the tradition of novenas because we are not getting together because someone died, but because we are together to pray for a lot of things, she said. Each one is praying for their own things, for peace in the world, for our families, and especially at the moment, it is bigger and we all need a lot of things. We pray for the young people to take on this world when we are gone. We pray for the abundance of the ocean and the earth to feed us. We pray for all the people who have left us, and we also pray for those who are sick. After the nightly prayers, they gather in fellowship for coffee and homemade Italian pastries brought by those taking part. The prayer gathering concludes with a mass on Saturday, June 13th, after which there will be a party and plenty of food. The traditional novena lasts 9 days. As a teenager in Gloucester, Sanfilippo recalled how they would walk around with pots and pans filled with food for the many open houses during novenas. We are a family of great faith. My promise was whenever we would buy our first house, I would start the novena to St. Anthony, she remembered. That first house was on Harold Avenue, and a few years later on Beauport Avenue, a house which in 1991 had a devastating fire, although they would rebuild. The oldest child of an immigrant family, Sanfilippo was unable to attend college because of family obligations, but her lifelong advocacy were recognized at the highest level in 2009 when she received an honorary Doctor of Humane Letters degree from Salem State in recognition of her continued leadership and support of fishing communities. The degree also acknowledged her achievement in shaping the Gloucester Fishermen's Wives Association into a, quote, powerful force for conservation of New England's precious fishing grounds and heritage. The fishing community remains foremost in her life. Sanfilippo serves as the executive director of the Massachusetts Fishermen's Partnership and vice president of fishing industry relations for the Fishing Partnership Support Services. The need to preserve the fishing grounds remains important because the oceans are an important source of protein, she said. When the fishermen return to shore, they bring back an important source of food, fish, and lobster. These fishing grounds need to always be protected. House okays bill to curb book banning. It's written by Christian Wade, Boston. State lawmakers are moving to block banned books in public libraries and schools amid a rise in challenges from parents and conservative groups. A Democratic-led bill approved Wednesday by the State House of Representatives would make Massachusetts one of a handful of states to effectively outlaw book bans because of, quote, personal, political, or doctrinal views of setting new restrictions on receiving state funding and other actions. While the bill passed 153-3 with bipartisan support, House Speaker Ron Mariano, a Quincy Democrat, blamed, quote, Republican politicians nationwide for seeking to remove books from schools that don't fit their strict ideological worldview. Mariano, a former high school teacher, said the legislation is, quote, representative of the Commonwealth's commitment to ensuring that our schools remain a place where learning is valued above all else and where students are exposed to the experiences of people from all walks of life. Under the proposal, school districts, charter schools, and local education agencies would be required to adopt and publish a written school library policy that governs the selection and use of library materials and outlines procedures for responding to book challenges. Libraries would be required to adopt the American Library Association's Library Bill of Rights that declares that, quote, materials should not be excluded because of the origin, background, or views of those contributing to their creation or similar policy. The measure passed the state Senate in November with bipartisan support. This is not a partisan issue, and all people from across the political spectrum have much to fear from ideologues policing what other people and their families may read, State Representative Adam Scanlon, a North Attleboro Democrat and primary sponsor of the bill, said in remarks Wednesday. The freedom to read is to read widely, encounter a broad spectrum of ideas, and learn freely is a key to ensuring the preparation of able and civically minded citizens. Backers of the proposal, including the Massachusetts School Library Association and the Massachusetts Library Association, said the changes are aimed at pushing back efforts by parents and conservative groups to remove certain titles from schools and public libraries. Those groups have cited an uptick in, quote, book challenges by parent groups, conservative organizations, and lawmakers who want to remove certain books from schools and libraries, especially those dealing with LGBTQ and racial themes. PEN America, that's P-E-N is the acronym, a nonprofit organization dedicated to freedom of expression, said more than 10,000 books were banned in public schools from 2023 to 2024. A sizable chunk of the book bans took place in Florida and Iowa, as both states enforced sweeping laws targeting classroom material, PEN said. Massachusetts librarians say they have been seeing a rise in the number of book challenges from parents and outside groups upset with what they view as inappropriate content or content on sexuality and racism for younger readers. Conservative groups say parents are pushing back against what they see as inappropriate focus on social issues and emotional learnings over traditional education and the introduction of sexually explicit books in middle and high school libraries. But critics say book challenges are mostly being driven largely by racism and homophobia and are harming students and stifling free speech. Gloucester Officer Saves Life of Choking Child. It's written by Bobby Grady. Gloucester Police Lieutenant Joseph Balbo recently saved a 3-year-old boy from choking while at Stage Ford Park for a planning meeting for the upcoming Battle of Gloucester reenactment. Balbo said around 6 p.m. Tuesday he heard a commotion near the playground by the visitor center when someone yelled the child was choking and he ran over to help. I grabbed the child, flipped him over with one hand and in a series of back blows, Balbo said. When I looked to see if there was any obstruction in his mouth, we noticed a large chunk of hot dog fell right out on the ground. He added the child was partially breathing. He looked white as a ghost, and he said it was difficult to tell how much oxygen the child was getting. Balbo said this was his first time administering back blows to a choking child. My training kicked in and performed, and everything went smoothly, he said. Honoring local nonprofits. The Cape Ann Community Foundation announced the 7 recipients of its 2026 grants and a public bowling event to celebrate these local efforts to improve the community. The nonprofit organization Foundation was established in 2015 by the Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce to manage the proceeds of sales of the Cape Ann license plates, which make these grants possible. The Cape Ann Community Foundation awards grants for projects that support its mission to improve the economy and quality of life for residents of the greater Cape Ann. The grant recipients will be celebrated at the Foundation's 3rd annual Candle Pins for a Cause event on Wednesday, June 17th at Cape Ann Lanes, where all are welcome. The funds we raise with Candle Pins for a Cause, together with the revenue from Cape Ann license plate sales, will help us continue to support our region's nonprofit and civic organizations, said Britta Cahoon, a co-chair of Cape Ann Community Foundation. The 2026 grant recipients address a variety of needs, including food insecurity, support for seniors, and at-risk youth. This year's recipients are 100 trees to maintain new street trees planted by its grassroots organization, Accord Food Pantry to continue Mobile Mart in its Essex at the Council in Essex at the Council on Aging, Shabbat Cape Ann to support the Cape Ann Jewish Cultural Festival, a free community event featuring an afternoon of music, art, food, and shared cultural experiences, Cornerstone Creative to support expanding its mentorship and woodworking program to provide local youth with hands-on skill building and opportunities for professional growth, First R Foundation to help cover the cost of books for kindergarten and first grade students, Kinship Farm to expand its Grow Food for Good program to address food insecurity and promote sustainable agriculture, and Friends of Manchester by the Sea Council on Aging in support of the organization's all-voluntary coffee and conversation to provide refreshments, supplies, guest speakers, and other programs for seniors. For the June 17 event, organizers note that anyone interested in fielding a team can do so with a $240 donation. There also are silver and bronze sponsorship levels available and can be viewed on the website love-capeann, all one word, .com. Individual bowlers can participate with a $40 donation to the foundation. Those who would like to attend and cheer on the bowlers are asked to make a $25 donation to support the foundation. Bowlers and attendees can register by clicking on the event link on the foundation's website. Candle Pins for a Cause is a great way to show our support for the nonprofit organizations that serve Greater Cape Ann, and the Cape Ann license plates are a great way to show our love for our community, said Tony Sapienza, CACF co-chair. To learn more about the foundation, the Cape Ann license plate, and the organizations it supports, visit, all one word, lovecapeann.com. Again, lovecapeann.com. We have time for one or two letters to the editor. Thanks to all who saved Sailboat. When out of town May 31st, our sailboat, Caitlin Dees, D-E-A-S, a Cape Dory 25D, was on a finger float in Old Harbor when the float became separated from the main float and the vessel and the float were pushed across the harbor and smashed up against Lumber Wharf and the rocks there. Within minutes, the Rockport Harbor Masters responded and, at great risk to themselves, managed to secure the vessel and move it to safety. Other townsfolk responded as well to assist. Unfortunately, the sailboat was severely damaged, but it can be repaired. Our thanks go out to Scott Story, Rosemary Lesh, and Story Reed of the Harbor Master's Department. Scott had to be pulled out of Old Harbor when he was thrown from the vessel as he was trying to secure it. Thanks also to Stephen Ouellette, Bruce and Reed Levick, Stan Patey, and Riley Blanchard, and others who are unnamed but are not unappreciated. Lastly, thanks to Doris Patey, Assistant Harbor Master for Old Harbor, ex officio, who from her window down on Pier Avenue saw the breach of the main float and immediately sounded the alarm, Femme Formidable. Kevin Kiley, Rockport. Tour gave snapshot of history. On a beautiful early June evening, I had the pleasure of joining approximately 25 Rockport residents for a fascinating walk through First Parish Cemetery sponsored by the Sandy Bay Historical Society. Our guides, Andrea Quinn, Paige Eaton, and Jim Fitzpatrick, led us through the cemetery, sharing the stories of many Rockport families and notable residents who helped shape our community. Among the graves we visited were those of Richard Tarr, Rockport's first settler, whose legacy remains an important part of our town's history. With approximately 550 individuals buried within the cemetery, the site serves as a remarkable reminder of the generations who came before us. Veterans of an American Revolution, the War of 1812, and the Civil War rest there, each representing a chapter in both our nation's history and Rockport's story. What was most striking was reflecting on the lives these men and women lived, the hardships they endured, the communities they built, and the contributions they made long before modern conveniences and technology. Walking among these historic gravestones was a powerful reminder of the resilience, sacrifice, and determination of those who helped create the Rockport we know today. And that's from Paul Murphy of Rockport. As always, and for all of us here at the Talking Information Center, this is George Crying saying thanks so much for listening. Please be sure to join us again tomorrow for another edition of the Gloucester Daily Times. Have a great evening.